What does the story of Chris Langan tell us? His explanations, as heartbreaking as they are also a little strange. His mother forgets to sign his financial aid form and, just like that, no scholarship. He tries to move from a morning to an afternoon class, something students do every day, and gets stopped cold. And why were Langan's teachers at Rita Montana State so indifferent to his plight? Teachers typically delight in minds as brilliant as his. Langan talks about dealing with Rita Montana State as if they were some kind of vast and unyielding government bureaucracy. But colleges, particularly small liberal arts colleges like Reed, tend not to be rigid bureaucracies. Making allowances in the name of helping someone stay in school is what professors do all the time. Even in his discussion of Harvard, it's as if Langan has no concept of the culture and particulars of the institutions he's talking about. When you accept a paycheck from these people, it's going to come down to what you want to do and what you feel is right versus what the man says you can do to receive another paycheck. What? One of the main reasons college professors accept a lower paycheck than they could get in private industry is that university life gives them the freedom to do what they want to do and what they feel is right. Langan has Harvard backwards. When Langan told me his life story, I couldn't help but think of the life of Robert Oppenheimer, the physicist who famously headed the American effort to develop the nuclear bomb during World War II. Oppenheimer, by all accounts, was a child with a mind very much like Chris Langan's. His parents considered him a genius. One of his teachers recalled that he received every new idea as perfectly beautiful. He was doing lab experiments by the third grade and studying physics and chemistry by the fifth grade. When he was 9, he once told one of his cousins, "Ask me a question in Latin and I will answer you in Greek." Oppenheimer went to Harvard and then on to Cambridge University to pursue a doctorate in physics. There, Oppenheimer, who struggled with depression his entire life, grew despondent. His gift was for theoretical physics, and his tutor, a man named Patrick Blackett, who would win a Nobel Prize in 1948, was forcing him to attend to the minutiae of experimental physics, which he hated. He grew more and more emotionally unstable, and then, in an act so strange that to this day no one has properly made sense of it, Oppenheimer took some chemicals from the laboratory and tried to poison his tutor. Blackett, luckily, found out that something was amiss. The university was informed. Oppenheimer was called on the carpet. And what happened next is every bit as unbelievable as the crime itself. Here is how the incident is described in American Prometheus, Kai Bird and Martin Sherwin's biography of Oppenheimer. After protracted negotiations, it was agreed that Robert would be put on probation and have regular sessions with a prominent Harley Street psychiatrist in London. Probation? Here we have two very brilliant young students who run into a problem that imperils their college careers. Langan's mother has missed a deadline for his financial aid. Oppenheimer has tried to poison his professor. To continue on, they are required to plead their case to authority. And what happens? Langan gets his scholarship taken away, and Oppenheimer gets sent to a psychiatrist. Oppenheimer and Langan might both be geniuses, but in other ways they could not be more different. The story of Oppenheimer's appointment to be scientific director of the Manhattan Project, 20 years later, is perhaps an even better example of this difference. The general in charge of the Manhattan Project was Leslie Groves, and he scoured the country trying to find the right person to lead the atomic bomb effort.